finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where we absolutely wrecked our recommended section on YouTube so you don't have to. We are your now red-pilled hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, and today Chelsea is doing an episode. I gave her ideas, but I don't actually know what she went with, so I'm just gonna leave it to her now.
I need to open my document. Okay.
Okay.
Australia is a pretty spooky country, right? Despite all the actual spooky sightings going on down under, and a country full of criminals.
Criminals and poison.
Yes.
Venom everywhere.
And the scariest animals known to man. It is already pretty much the scariest place on Earth, despite some actual spooky things going on. And I say that with the utmost love, because it's a beautiful country despite all its downfall.
That's where Bluey comes from.
Yeah, Bluey.
And an expose on the Falun Gong. All good in my books.
We've slowly been going on trips around the world, and today I've randomly chosen, but more honestly been suggested, Australia as a target, so here we are. Now, let's check in on the spookiness happening down under, and for your listening pleasure, I've alternated cryptid and paranormal phenomenon to shake it up. So first up, we got the bunyip. If you were looking for a bunyip, I would start with looking in the southeastern Australia portions of the country, in and around ponds, wetlands, swamps, billabongs. I have no idea what a billabong is, and I didn't look it up. I had too much to look
up. Aren't they surf shorts?
Like a brand of clothing. That's what I think it is.
Look around clothing.
Around the billabongs and riverbanks where it rests during the day. By the way, there's going to be some crazy language in this because Australians talk funny.
They speak English in theory. In theory only.
It's like joke English. During the night, I would probably seek shelter because that's when you're going to become bunyip prey.
Chelsea, dare I ask, what does a bunyip look like? Or do we get into that in a bit?
Yeah, we get into that probably right now. And what exactly would you be looking for if you're looking for a bunyip? You wouldn't just say, I'm looking for a bunyip without knowing what it looks like. You could be finding millions of bunyips if you weren't knowing what it's looking like. Generally, you're looking for something aquatic. That's for sure, because everything else varies a lot. Some say it has a dog-like face, dark fur, a horse-like tail, flippers, walrus-like tusks, a crocodile-like head, and a duck-like bill. There are even claims that it resembles a snake with a beard. So if you see one of those, it may or may not be a bunyip. They are expected to be skilled swimmers, and I would assume that's because it's aquatic. I wouldn't want an aquatic animal to be a bad swimmer. That seems to go against nature.
You think so, but hippos are pretty bad swimmers. They bounce. They sink to the bottom and bounce.
But they have the cutest little legs when they swim, and they, like, take off.
Yeah, they're pretty bad swimmers. They spend their entire life in water, pretty much.
Plus, no one can find their testicles. The freaks of nature.
Yeah, they're the rest of the world's bunyip.
Yeah, maybe they are, but I don't know if there's hippos in Australia.
Not yet.
I mean, they could probably apply for some of Pablo Escobar's. They're looking to get rid of some. One legend says that a man named Bunyip broke the rainbow serpent's greatest law by eating his totem animal. Banished by the spirit Biami, the man became an evil spirit that lured tribesmen and their livestock into the water so he could eat them. that is obviously a indigenous legend. In Aboriginal Australian culture, which is where I got that previous fact from, a bunyip is a spirit creature, which refer back to what I said because I think I got the order mixed up. I'm not going to re-record that. The word bunyip translates outside, or maybe in Aboriginal Australian culture, to devil or evil spirit from the Wemba Wemba language. William Buckley was an English convicted criminal who was sent to Australia in 1802. While there, he escaped and joined the Walaranga tribe. He is known for sighting the bunyip on several occasions. That's a good thing to be known for. The bunyip sighter. He has a lot of them. One of the first, describing it as the size of a large calf with feathers that killed people.
Wait.
Yeah.
How do feathers kill people?
I think it was despite the feathers that it was killing people, not with feathers. And I don't even see anything aquatic being mentioned in here. A large calf with feathers that killed people. Oh, no, I can see why you're saying the feathers killed people. I have no answers from you. The sighting on this was poor.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just typed all those words into the AI image generator. I want to see what comes up.
Okay, report back. I love generating images on AI. Next up, in 1818, explorers James Meehan and Hamilton Hume discovered a peculiar carcass in Lake Bathurst in New South Wales. What a beautiful creature. Bottom right. I like that one.
Yeah. I like that there's birds on it.
In 1818, explorers James Meehan and Hamilton Hume discovered a peculiar carcass in Lake Bathurst in New South Wales. They did not call the creature a bunyip, but described the remains as similar to a manatee or hippopotamus. In July 1845, the Geelong Advertiser describes the bunyip in great detail. It was also the first recorded use of the term bunyip. In 1857, in the article titled The Bunyip, a newspaper reported on the drawings made by Edwin Stock Euler. Amongst the latter drawings, we noticed a likeness of the bunyip, or rather a view of the neck and shoulders of the animal. Mr. Stockhuler informs us that the bunyip is a large freshwater seal having two small padules, or fins attached to the shoulders, a long swan-like neck, a head like a dog, and a curious bag hanging under the jaw, resembling the pouch of a pelican. The animal is covered with hair, like the platypus, and the color is glossy black. Mr. Stockhuler saw no less than six of these curious animals at different times. His boat was within 30 feet of one near Maguire's Punt on the Goulburn, and he fired at the bunyip, which did not succeed in capturing him.
Huh. Was this an American by chance?
I don't know.
I also like that these are very clearly different described animals. But for some reason, they're just like, yeah, it's the same thing. They're all just bunyips.
The bunyip seems to be a catch-all for anything weird. The smallest appeared to be about 5 feet in length, and the largest exceeded 15 feet. The head of the largest was the size of a bullock's head and 3 feet out of water. After taking a sketch of the animal, Mr. Stockhuler showed it to several blacks of the Goulburn tribe. This is from a publication, so... who declared that the picture was Bunyip's brother, meaning a duplicate or likeness of the bunyip. The animals moved against the current at the rate of about 7 miles an hour, and Mr. Stockhuler states that he could have approached close to the specimens he observed had he not been deterred by the stories of the natives concerning the power and fury of the bunyip, and by the fact that his gun had only a single barrel and his boat was a very frail description. End quote. And then in the 1930s, when the Depression was at its worst, some of the most recent and frequent sightings occurred. And I just went through most of the famous sightings of the bunyip. In doing my research for this and trying to find more recent sightings of the bunyip, in which if you want to go to the people's views, you go to Reddit. I couldn't find any, but most of the people referred back to this, stating that this is why they're terrified of the bunyip, from a children's show in Australia, and it's a song about the bunyip.
The bunyip's partly animal, the bunyip's partly bird. The bunyip makes the strangest sounds that you have ever heard. So you better come home quickly.
This actually reminds me, childhood cartoons can leave trauma with you. I was terrified for a long time of, oh, what's the name of the jackalope? Because of that one episode of Tiny Toons.
Oh my god, yeah. What was it?
And Dad used to say when we were driving home at night, yeah, One-Eyed Jack was out in the forest.
That might actually be our parents doing for inflicting that damage. But yeah, I mean, some of the movies we used to watch had way more emotional pull on you than
yeah.
to cartoons now. That's the Bunyip. Just based on what I was reading, a lot of people terrified of the Bunyip, just based on, I think, just cultural reference.
Childhood trauma.
To it. And yeah. Childhood trauma. Next up is the Min Min Lights. Some things are just hard to take seriously when they're written in Australian. So the Min Min Lights are sightings of strange lights typically occurring in the Australian outback and span from New South Wales to Queensland, which is a fair amount of area from the far south to the north. Accounts of the light appearances vary, though they are most commonly described as being fuzzy, dish-shaped lights that appear to hover just above the horizon. They are often described as being white, though some accounts describe them as changing color from white to red to green and back again. And then some are described as being dim, others describe them as being bright enough to illuminate the ground under them and cause nearby objects to throw clearly defined shadows. So again, it greatly varies, but what we're getting at with these are weird lights. According to folklore, the lights sometimes follow or approach people and disappear when fired upon. There we go. There's the other one. Australians do it too. Sometimes very rapidly, only not be fired upon. This is how they approach you. Only to reappear later on, and anyone who chases the lights and catches them will never return to tell the tale. Some witnesses describe the light as appearing to approach them several times before retreating, and others report that the lights were able to keep pace with them when they were in a moving vehicle. Sightings? There are tons of these, unlike the Bunyip, which is just like, oh, I saw this weird animal.
it seems to be consistent, I would hope, too. And that, hey, I saw lights. Hey, me too. They weren't feathery or anything.
This could also fall under Bunyip. So, this is the user.
Light Bunyips.
This is a Reddit story, which is from user DMB Dread Maiden. They state, about 19 years ago near my hometown in country New South Wales, I used to get driven to catch a bus from a town called Parks, about 1.5 hours from my hometown, to go visit my then boyfriend in another town several hours away. The bus I had to travel to get to left from Parks around 2 a.m. and arrived back late at night when my dad would pick me up. On two separate occasions, we saw something strange. On the first occasion, we were driving along the country road in between two towns, the road running in between farms, fenced off from the road. There were hills behind these farms that were silhouetted against the often bright night sky. We saw a big ball of light traveling down the hill parallel to our car, probably a couple of kilometers away, and we thought it was just a truck possibly driving along there, until we realized there wasn't a road there, and it was one light, not two, like car headlights, and it wasn't a motorcycle. Just because there wasn't a road there didn't mean it wasn't a vehicle, though, but it moved so smoothly and quickly that we just thought it was odd. We didn't really think much about it until a few weeks later we were doing the same drive late at night, possibly a bit after midnight, and we saw the same light in the same area moving quickly and smoothly again. This time, Dad decided to stop the car and turn off the engine. When he did that, the light came down the hill and hurling towards us across the farm fields and over the fence that divided the farms from the road. It was fast. The ball of light was probably about 2 meters off the ground and had a diameter of around 1.5 meters. It was gigantic, silent, a ball of light that kind of fluctuated and rotated as it moved. It slowed and hovered in the middle of the road behind our car, probably about 50 meters behind us. I got so scared, but Dad was fascinated, watching it inquisitively. I was panicking and yelling to start the car and drive. I'm not sure what happened after that because Dad turned the engine on and we started driving. We never saw the light again, but that was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And every now and again, I mention it to my dad just so that I know I'm not going crazy, and Dad always confirms every detail of it with me. Yeah, I'm not sure, honestly, if I were to see something like that, what would set that apart from me thinking it was a UFO? Maybe just that there wasn't any defining structure to it, it was literally just a light?
Yeah, it might just be a size thing, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, Will-O-The-Wisps are, like, considerably smaller than a spacecraft.
Yeah, that's true. So that's the Min Min Lights. The next is the Hawkesbury River Monster of New South Wales. I couldn't not include this. We need to hear of the lake river monsters that inhabit every area of the earth. If you were looking for the Hawkesbury River Monster, I would start by looking in the apparently very deep Hawkesbury River in New South Wales, hotbed of weird things. I mean, you could just say that of all of Australia, but most of the population of Australia only lies in very small areas of Australia, so...
And they're very widely separated.
Yeah. It's said to be up to 24 feet long. That is the river monster, not the river. The Hawkesbury River Monster resembles a dinosaur and, like the Loch Ness, has a large body, a long neck, and flippers. Another underwater dweller that resembles a prehistoric plesiosaur. The Darug people painted pictures of this aquatic monster on rocks thousands of years ago, therefore it has been around for a long time. Depicted in the art as having a snake-like head, long neck, large body, and two sets of flippers with an eel-like tail. It basically just confirms what we think of it as being today. Because I said that twice. According to most reports, the Hawkesbury River Monster doesn't appear to be particularly hostile. It avoids people and gives them a curious look before submerging beneath the surface. Sightings of the creature have been reporting from Wise Man's Ferry at the western end of the river, eastward to the Broken Bay Brisbane Waters Expanse at the river's mouth. And there have been reports of strange slide marks similar to that of a crocodile along the banks of the river. Unsure of whether there are crocodiles that could be making those marks, I'm assuming they've ruled that out if it's a strange sighting. Tony Healy has among his files a 1912, I'm not sure who Tony Healy is, but he has this story in his files, from a 1912 story from the Evening News, Sydney, called Was It the Bun Yip? See? That concerns an alligator-like creature seen in South Creek, a tributary of the Hawkesbury River in Windsor, he said. The creature was seen by a boating party, a strange object swimming a short distance from them, about 4 feet in length, and resembled an alligator. There have been reports of them a hell of a lot bigger than that. I haven't been able to establish to my satisfaction that the reports of the bigger ones are genuine, but they may well be. Another report that sparked Healy's interest was one published in the Windsor and Richmond Gazette in 1924. Quote, people were talking about seeing a Titanic seahorse, and there's a specific eyewitness report by W.J. Riley, who along with his brother saw this thing while walking along the terrace, Windsor, at midday. They saw something in the river beneath in a deep hole, Healy said. End quote, requote, he said, we saw a big ugly thing, 2 foot 6 inches to 3 foot in depth, with a length of about 5 to 6 feet, and of a yellowish or sandy color. Whether its skin was scale covered or not, we could not see. We watched for 15 minutes. It had a square looking fish tail. It was not a pleasant looking animal. I should certainly not care to be in the water and have it after me. End quote. I agree with you right there, Healy.
Yeah.
That's the thing about water.
Is there a chance that these people are all just seeing alligators that definitely are in Australia?
It's appearing so. I mean, Australians aren't known to be the soberest of people.
And I don't speak fluent Australian, so is there a chance that bunyip is just Australian for crocodile or alligator?
It's true. But this one is the sea monster. They said it's not the bunyip. It could be the bunyip. It's not the bunyip. It was related to the sea monster in this
case. It just was too far outside of the normal parameters of a bunyip in this one spot.
Exactly. So next is the land bunyip, the Yowie. Okay, next the Yowie. So we're done with that one. This is my longest portion of this, and I'm surprised I didn't save this for last, but I'm very surprising sometimes. Even to myself, I never know what I'm going to do with my research or in life. If you were looking for a Yowie, I would start by going to Australia, and then by going to New South Wales and the Gold Coast of Queensland, the Great Barrier Reef, and the wilderness of the Mooyahau Range. So that's where most of the reports come from. And also, just anywhere in Australia really would be good enough where the population is, because I saw on Reddit, actually, just as an aside here, this isn't in my notes. Somebody posted a picture of where all the Yowie sightings are in Australia, and everyone was commenting, yeah, that's just the population map of Australia.
That's where people are, yeah.
Australia's take on Bigfoot. The Yowie's origins go back, as ape-like humanoids usually do, to Aboriginal myths. According to some accounts, the name Yowie is a corruption of the Darug word Yowie, which means demon or spirit. This Yowie is spelled Y-O-W-I, leaving the E out. The Darug people have a rich cultural history that includes many stories and legends about various supernatural creatures, and it is likely that the Yowie was included in these stories as a powerful and mysterious being. Other accounts suggest that the name Yowie comes from the word Yowie, this one spelled Y-O-W-E-E, which is used by the Yuin people of New South Wales to describe a large hairy creature that is said to inhabit the area. The Yuin people also have a rich cultural history and many stories about supernatural creatures, and it's possible that their legends also include the Yowie, spelled the normal way. In either case, it's likely that the name Yowie has been passed down through generations of Indigenous Australians and has come to be associated with the creature that is said to inhabit the Australian wilderness. The Yowie is described as being between 5 and 9 feet tall, with a large red mouth and talon-like claws, according to Aboriginal legends, and arms that extend to or past its knees. Seems like you'd have some problems there with that.
Well, it's like most primates have longer arms than humans.
That's true.
Because, you know, they're climbers, so yeah. You need to be able to reach stuff.
Exactly. We don't climb things generally, just monkey bars.
And aptly named based on that.
Yes. It's also noted that the Yowie contain two large fang-like canines, which distinguish the Yowie from other Bigfoot species. It usually has brown or reddish fur. Five-toe footprints have been recorded up to 18 inches in length. And while mostly bipedal and seen to be standing and walking someone like a human, other reports have described the Yowie running on all fours in much the same way a great ape would walk. While still others report describing the creature crawling in all fours in a spider-like fashion and seem to be able to move at great speed when either upright or on all fours, which is a super creepy detail. There's some great websites documenting Yowie sightings. Really good references. I'll put them in the show notes. There was also, in one of these websites that I read that do a lot of research on the Yowie, they said people report that it walks really strange, but it can't put any reason to
why. They don't know why it feels so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They theorized, at least one theory, that it's moving strange is, well, I would say because it's crawling on all fours like a spider. But they said it's because they moved, instead of pushing yourself from your back feet like we do, it moved in a fashion of walking and then pulling itself up with the leg that you step forward with, which I think would be really hard to do. It made me really think when I read that. That's really
okay. I wonder if it had anything to do with the arms, just because they have longer arms and maybe they either sway them slightly different than us or don't sway them at all. Although that would be something you notice.
It really could be anything, and just hearing somebody say they moved weird without any follow-up on that. They're described as being one of the most aggressive Sasquatch species, and they have been reported tearing the heads off kangaroos and dogs and attacking humans as well. Let me get to this account here.
Oh, I'm so happy we have Bigfoots and not Yowies.
Yeah. Okay, so this is an article from news.com.au. I don't think this is owned by a cult, but, you know, I'm caught off guard all the time by what news outlets cults own. So that's all I have to say on that. This one's titled, Meet the Man Who Claimed He's Been Almost Killed by a Yowie Twice. I think he'd stay out of the woods after that. You have probably never seen a Yowie. You might have never heard of a Yowie. Well, you have now because you've listened to this podcast. But one man has not only dedicated his life to hunting down the mythological beast, he says he's almost been killed by one twice. Yowie researcher Dean Harrison has described his two close encounters with the mysterious ape-like creature, which is comparable to the North American Sasquatch or the Himalayan Yeti. He says he was nearly killed by a Yowie on two occasions, first in Ormo in the Gold Coast hinterland and again in Kilkiven near Gympie. That was a game changer. I can't go back into the bush by myself. I just got hit with a big dose of reality, he told QT, and nearly got taken down by one at Ormo in 1997, and that was really scary. It was only by the grace of God that I survived. I made a phone call at 11 p.m. in a clearing before going into the bush, and if I hadn't, I wouldn't be here today. This thing really meant business. But the crunchier was in 2009 at Kilkivan, and if you guys weren't there to rescue me, I wouldn't be here. That took a good 8 months to get over. The scary thing is that the Yowies have a massive advantage over us because of their eyesight in the dark. The thing that knocked me over ran down a hill in pitch darkness past obstacles, trees, and logs. The angles were so steep, but it sprinted down. It didn't miss a beat. That one chased me at Ormo was the same. The Yowie is Australia's very own Bigfoot. They're reputed to live in the wilderness, and witnesses claim to have seen them in all states and territories on the Australian mainland. Okay, so he doesn't really go into any details about how it almost killed him. That's the end of this article. I mean, it does go on quite extensively, but I'm just going to read this one last excerpt that's much further down the page, but it just caught my eye. That's not all. Mr. Harrison, not sure who he is because we're jumping in just randomly in the article, who has been researching Yowies for 20 years, also says many people who go missing in the bush were likely abducted by the creatures. He has even claimed he once saw a Yowie get tagged with a tracking device by intelligence agents at a rural Queensland army base in the 1990s.
Interesting.
Okay, enough with that article. I'll post it up in the show notes, hopefully. Okay, back to my amazing notes. Some farmers have reported stock being killed and legs being torn from sockets, bite marks and intestines being removed from the bodies of dead stock. Some believe the creatures have the ability to use infrasound, which may be used in hunting and confrontations. Reports of witnesses being roared at and physically feeling the roar are not uncommon, and we see that a lot with the Bigfoot. They seem to have the same interaction types as the typical Bigfoot. I literally just said that. That's what happens when I go off the script. Tree knocking, rock throwing, whooping, weird stick formations, and large footprints, among others, that are reported with the Yowie. He does also have some paranormal Bigfoot qualities. Some sighting reports strange occurrences such as light orbs preceding or following a sighting or encounter, feelings of sickness, dread, and depression in some witnesses, failure of electronic equipment which worked prior to and after an encounter, glowing eyes have been reported, and this may have nothing to do with the supernatural, but a part of the creature's biology. Bioluminescence is found in a variety of life forms, but what the significance of glowing eyes is to these creatures remains to be understood. The Yowie has an incredible amount of sightings, along with the Min Min lights. With the Yowie, I would say even more. I even found a thermal image video of a Yowie, which I've never seen before, funny enough. And in the spirit of the podcast, let's watch a video. This is Yowie researcher Dean Harrison reveals proof creature exists. I wonder if this is the same guy from the other article I read. A Queensland-based Yowie researcher has claimed he uncovered fresh evidence that Australia's version of Bigfoot actually does exist. Dean Harrison, who has been tracking the elusive creature for decades, released a new video from a recent trip to the Gold Coast hinterland, producing what he said is the most significant evidence of the Yowie's existence to date. The clip, taken on May 4th at Springbrook National Park, used thermal technology, shows what Mr. Harrison said are 2 9-feet-tall Yowies in the wild. Speaking to Sunrise this morning, Mr. Harrison said the night vision shows something hugging a tree before 2 huge Yowies step out into view.
So sorry, they didn't say what the thing was hugging the tree?
No, I don't know if it's a Yowie or a human.
Or a bunyip, yeah.
It's a bunyip if we don't know what it is. We estimate that they must have been at least 9 feet tall and they made no noise arriving and no noise leaving the area, he said. We wouldn't have known if anything was there if it wasn't for the thermal cameras. Did you watch the video?
I did. It's hard to tell what the hell's going on.
Okay. Be good. I'll post the link up for that as well so you can take a look. The Yowie also has its place of part of an Aboriginal people oral history going back thousands of years, like we see with the Sasquatch. And sightings have been documented, not orally told. Of course, first documented European report of a Yowie or wild man, as it was called at the time, was in 1789. The creature had reportedly been captured and taken to England. When they originally recorded the Yowie sightings in the 1850s, the local media initially referred to it as an indigenous ape. Sightings, again, there are many. I'm just going to read a couple here. The first one, I thought this was a really good one, is Nightcap NP, New South Wales 2022. Nightcap is the place name. And this one goes like this. I would like to start off by saying my partner and I aren't the most experienced bushwalkers, so most of these finds were either on the side of the path or not too far into the bush and off the track. We are always together during our finds and encounters, and they occurred during the day all around Nightcap National Park area and surroundings. So 30th of December, first find. Early into my exploring, wasn't taking pictures or documenting. It was our first time walking this track, and as we were walking down the track, we started finding multiple branches and sticks stuck to the ground with force. They had clearly been done with intention, as they're facing vertically and pushing pretty far into the ground. We also found two stick formations in the shape of antlers stabbed into the ground. We noticed them because they were actually very beautiful and symmetrical, almost like artwork. My partner and I noticed every one of the sticks, and he was pulling them out as we walked along. We got to the falls near the end of the road and hung out there for about an hour just enjoying the rock pools and the view, then began to walk back to the car. We were shocked to find new sticks forked into the ground and even one other antler formation. We were very observant and saw every one of the sticks on the way there and pulled them out. So to find new sticks and have been placed within an hour while we were at the falls was super strange. There's no way there were people there we would have saw or heard them. Second significant event the same day, Roomery Park Campgrounds. Again, this was our first time visiting this area and walking this track. After walking the track, we were about to leave and we were walking across the road to the car, and I heard this strange grunting noise coming from the pine forest about 20 meters up the hill to my left, and my instant rational thought was that it was a pig, so I screamed pig really loud. Then out of nowhere, a pine cone came flying out of the pine forest past our heads and hit the tree across the road from us with force. How dense was that pine cone? We went running into the pine trees to find the said pig, but there was nothing there. We walked around for a while, scratching our heads, trying to figure out what it was, but we couldn't find anything, so we just went home. So I'm just gonna leave it at that, just due to time restraints. These people do go on to have other encounters, and I'm just gonna read you the titles of them. February 19th, possible encounter, tree knocking replies, something big in the bush. Then there's the 16th of March, which is titled stick teepees. So from this, you get seeing that they're very akin to Bigfoot. Yowie, I find to be very interesting, just like the Bigfoot stuff. Just, there were tons and tons of documents of this. So yeah, I'll post up the websites that I found very helpful with the sightings. And just the other sighting, I'd heard about this before, I don't know if you have. And this is former Queensland Senator Bill O'Chee recounts a Yowie sighting he had when he was younger on his official government website.
Interesting.
He has a long thing about himself on his website. I'm going to post this one up as well. I'll have lots of links for you to look through. His encounter goes like this. While at school camp near Springbrook in 1977, O'Chee spotted a Yowie. At the time, he described the creature to the local Gold Coast paper. About 20 of us saw it. It was about 3 meters tall, covered in hair, had a flat face, and walked to the side in a crab-like style. It smashed small saplings and trees like matchsticks as it careered through the bush. Nearly three decades later, O'Chee remained convinced of the Yowie's existence. And that is the end of that sighting. Last one we have, the Warrigal Dingo Shapeshifter. Other variations of this include the Stylosaurine Shapeshifter and the Tasmanian Tiger Shapeshifter. I think at this point they're just looking for a shapeshifter. Warrigal Shapeshifters mainly live in small packs, especially in the city, to remain inconspicuous. They live mostly in Australia, but have also migrated to other parts of the world. There is at least one tribe of Aboriginal Australians that is a larger pack of the Warrigal. The Warrigal half-forms are basically a man-sized dingo that walks comfortably on its hind legs. And the Warrigal who live with Aboriginal tribes have the ability to work some native magic. I couldn't find a whole lot on this, but I did find an interesting Reddit story of somebody theorizing that it could be the shapeshifter, so I thought I'd share it. And it's by user LesbianGrowl13. And they're sharing their Australian cryptid story. I live in the bushlands in New South Wales in a very small town, like seriously in the middle of nowhere. Which is basically all of Australia. I was about 12 or 13 years old. It was around, I would say, 9 to 10 p.m. I was walking my friend home, and he only lived a few houses down from me, but there was some distance between the houses. So we're walking to his house, and he stops and says, "Watch out, a snake." And I'm thinking it's okay, it's just a snake. We just walk around it, as Australians think, but anyone else would be terrified. Then we see it go from a small snake to a possum, almost to a wallaby, then a dog that chased us all the way back to my house. There were burnouts going around because it was summer and the grass and weeds were going to attract snakes. I think burnouts are when they burn the grass off. I still don't know what it was, but it freaks me out. It could have been a dog or a really big possum, but it was the size of a St. Bernard, but it was a black German shepherd or something. Any ideas? It's around Burrippy Land. I would say Bunyip, for sure.
Probably a Bunyip.
And then last one I'm going to share is Australia's UFO capital, which is Wycliffe Well. Considered the best location to see a UFO if you happen to be in Australia. It's way out of the way, so if you're there. According to the Sun Herald and Time magazine, they are ranked in the top UFO spots in the world.
Interesting.
Located in the middle of the desert, this is a tiny settlement mostly visited as a stopover between the town Alice Springs and Tennant Creek. Also close by is the Devil's Marbles, which are its own paranormal hotspot I left out from this, where individuals have reported mysterious wailing, among other things, at night. Associated with UAPs for decades, some believe that it is closely tied to the nearby Pine Gap intelligence base. And visitors to Wycliffe Well go back to the mid-19th century, when this little oasis was a stop for telegraph linemen. Fast forward to World War II, and Wycliffe Well continued its run as a way station, this time for servicemen. It was with the World War II soldiers that the sightings started. So many sightings that the folks who ran the roadhouse started to keep a log of visitors streaking through the night sky, a practice still kept today. And there is a sighting there. It is somebody relaying a long story about somebody who was passing through, and they happened to see a lot of weird cars parked there. And so they stopped when they were getting gas and was like, "Hey, what's going on?" And they were like, "Hey, we just saw a UFO came by last night and it caught a lot of attention. And a UFO had hovered over a dam that's in the area and I guess sucked up all of the water and left."
Interesting.
I know. It was very long-winded to get that point across, so I just thought that I would share that quickly in wrapping up
the episode. Yeah, makes sense. And that is an episode I think we've always wanted to do at some point, is UFOs in water, because that's a different thing, even than the USOs.
And USOs, I think are two, you could go two very different ways with those USOs and then UFOs in relation to water. But yeah, that's paranormal Australia. Australia has a lot going on by the means of weird things. Yeah, that's how I would describe it, I think.
Awesome. It definitely does. And it may or may not be more than just a bunyip at the end of the day, just because we still don't fully understand the concept.
The Yowie for sure is its own thing, but the bunyip pretty much just encapsulates everything else, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But while you ponder this, we should just give a friendly reminder that I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. Yeah. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
I knew you from somewhere. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes, or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.